Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Bottom Line Sports Show, with great guests and great lives all call home. Now, from the Man Cave Studios in New Jersey, here are your hosts of the Bottom Line Sports Show.
Always a pleasure to be back on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Gerald Brown here, flying solo momentarily, 347-324-5839. Dynamic show. As always, prepare for you guys tonight. We'll look back on this whole Duke national championship, and as painful as it may sound, about a round of applause for the Duke Blue Devils winning another championship. Yeah. We'll talk about that. I have to get right into it because I'm sorry, it's bothering me. I've never understood why in baseball, I think it's baseball, you see it primarily in baseball, and even now in college basketball, baseball and basketball for the most part, where after the fact, umpires and NBA referees, they acknowledge that a mistake was made. And they make this sort of grand statement, an announcement, if you will, as if it doesn't have an impact on the game. I just think about Joyce, the umpire Joyce. His first name is escaping me. And Jim Joyce, the umpire for it was umpiring the game with the Detroit Tigers. Armando Galarraga had a perfect game. He blew the call. Now, granted, in baseball, you don't have the instant replay to go back and check stuff, but they're still getting up to speed with that. But he went back and he apologized, and it's almost like baseball steps in, and it's almost they come to the defense of the things that you see with the naked eye. Now, granted, in the bang-bang play, you know what? It's a 50-50 gamble. I respect that. But we have technology in place. And if baseball knew this thing, that he blew it, how do you make the right wrong? How do you make the wrong right? How do you do it? And it took place last night in the Duke game, and I don't want to sound like a sore loser. I don't. But NCAA supervisor of officials basically said that they did not see the game's three or four officials did not see the same angle as TV viewers during a late controversial review. With under 2 minutes to play, Duke was up by five, a baseline out-of-bounds play. Joe DeRosa, Michael Stevens, and Pat Driscoll went to the table. And, you know, they saw this. Now, John Adams, was basically the head of the supervisor of officials. And they know that these guys made a mistake. But the problem is, I can't believe this, that somebody actually told me, that – the umpires or the officials do not see, just like NBA officials, they don't see the same camera angles that we happen to see on television. And I'm trying to figure to myself, you know, that's almost the equivalent of the Super Bowl, if you will. That's the biggest game of the year. That's the culmination of the year. That's it. So you have a multitude of camera angles. If CBS has all those angles and cameras in there, what angles are you looking at? What feed are you looking at? I mean, I just don't understand that they didn't see the same angles. And I don't know. I think that, you know, maybe they feel compelled to throw the ball or put the blame on, if you will, CBS. But I'm just having a hard time trying to wrap my head around saying, what other angle are you looking at? I mean, I don't know. Are you using the camera angles of a feed from inside the arena of the Lucas Oil Field Stadium? I don't, what angles are you using? Why not use a national broadcast feed that has multiple angles? And yet, that right there was a changer in the outcome of the game. And I know before people start saying, oh, you're biased, you're hating on Duke. No. You don't know if it would change the outcome of the game? Well, think about it this way. They go down. Wisconsin scores twice, hits two big threes. They push the game to the point it was down two. Now they're down five, and they hit that, and they score there. Well, now they have a little bit more time. So before anybody says that there's no way you can guarantee and say that it would have changed the outcome of the game, true. However, it would have made it a lot closer, especially after Wisconsin got the game closer to like about 2 points or so. So it's just one of those things where it burns me up inside when the NBA is notorious for doing this. Yeah, that was a mistake by the referees. That goal shouldn't have been. I remember seeing a game this year against the Memphis Grizzlies and Sacramento Kings. A regular season game. And I think Courtney Lee, with 1/10 of a second, takes an inbound pass, gets enough time to put his hands on it, reverse and puts it up, and the Kings lost. And there was this whole big dilemma that the Kings did not tip the ball. We saw on the camera, the video, that the ball was actually tipped because the direction of the ball changed. And if you're talking about people at home that are able to see this, how are the referees are not able to see this? And then it's always after the fact, the league comes back and says, oh, you know what? We made a mistake. Yeah, you know what? They made a mistake. They should have won that game. But then how do you make the wrong right? You don't reward them. You know, they didn't reward the Sacramento Kings the game. They didn't reward them. You know, it's the same thing what they do, I think, with Russell Westbrook had a triple-double that was in question, a rebound or assist that was in question. I think it was a rebound. And they took it away from him. Why don't they do that in terms of some of these reversing some of these bad calls, especially when the outcome of the game, when it happens, it has a bearing on the outcome of the game? You know, now I'm not saying that they should have gone to automatically and said, hey, you know what, let's make them play the last 2 minutes of the game all over. No. But I think that's just something I really, really can't wrap my head around. And now, you know, the conversation turns to the fact is that where do you place a guy like Mike Krzyzewski in the pantheon of great coaches that have coached in college basketball? Is he the greatest coach of all time? You know, that's what I heard. I think some of the conversation was centered around the fact is that in this era with the one and done, you know, all the championships he has, is he the greatest? He is the greatest coach of all time. And it almost sort of parallels to the argument of who's the greatest basketball player of all time. You know, you can have so many different arguments that it's so difficult. And, you know, I just don't think that, look, winning five championships, I think that's unbelievable. I think you give him his credit where credit is due. But let's look at this thing for what it's worth. Okay? It's not like he's coaching Little Sisters of the Poor. His involvement in USA Basketball has helped to recruit. He went and got the one and done. He couldn't get them. They were all going to Kentucky. And whatever one-and-done guys he did get, you know, there was a drop-off. And, I mean, you know, I hate to sound like a hater and just a person that, you know.
Get your mind right.
No, I am getting my mind right. But I look at some of this stuff, and I'm a realist. If you look at Duke this year, was this the strongest team? They only had eight scholarship players. Now, yes, they lined up and they played the teams that they were supposed to play. They won. I understand that. But can we also look at college basketball and say maybe it was a down year overall? You know, if you look at it, you know, I mean, this is a Duke team that essentially was knocked out last year by Mercer. Okay? It's a Duke team. And it doesn't take anything away from Coach K and his accomplishments. But to say that he's the greatest of all time, no, you can't say that because the evolution of the game in the college basketball ranks has evolved. It's changed. You're talking about John Wooden. I think a lot of people say John Wooden is considered the greatest of all time. He won 88 games. Yes, that's impressive. But let's keep in mind, winning titles at that level, you only had to play two games and then you go to the national championship game or the Final Four or whatever. It was a shorter road to a championship compared to this day and age. He does get some of the elite players. I mean, he's a Duke, you know. Again, he's built that program. He deserves a lot of credit. But five titles and saying that he's the greatest, I don't know. I really don't know. And, I mean, that's an argument that begs a lot of discussion because if you look at his success, you know, as many championships he's won, they've had a lot of questionable downside. They've had a lot of failure. I mean, this is the last time they've been there since 2010. I just think that, again, you know, great coach. Is he the greatest of all time? I don't know. I don't think you can really say that. You know, 855-NBA-JUMP, 855-622-5867. Bo Ryan, I think, did an unbelievable job. But I looked at last night, and there was a couple of times where I said, you know, from a coaching standpoint, and I was really curious. Once the game was over, it was just didn't really, it was anticlimactic after that whole, you know, snafu by the college officials and stuff, not rewarding Wisconsin with the ball, and rightfully so. Really just took a lot out of me in terms of watching that game. But a couple of things I just really was curious to hear about. You know, I really believe that, you know, you try to watch SportsCenter after the culmination of a game. You have so many different angles. It's really hard to really get in there and get the sort of gist of what the coaches are saying and all that stuff because everybody has to weigh in on their opinion, and I understand that. It's live television. However, I was very curious to hear what Bo Ryan had to say because I think that there were stretches in that second half where they tried to establish Frank Kaminsky too much. And I think that basically he ran out of gas. He ran out of gas pretty much maybe, I don't know, the 3-minute mark, 2-minute mark. I think that at some point he needed to get Kaminsky a breather and maybe have him out there on the bench for a little extended period of time. You know, when they were up by 9 and I think they started chipping away, maybe there's a level of panic, but Kaminsky did not finish the game as strong as he possibly could. And I think it was really evident on a couple of plays. I think number one, on the sort of pick and roll, the high pick and roll, he doesn't show out on Tyus Jones, the most outstanding player. Jones repeatedly twice hits, repeatedly hits two major three-point shots, and it was just really didn't show out. He didn't show out fast enough. Really very, again, lackadaisical, and a lot of it could be made from the fact is that being very tired. And then the second thing I think was so evident, he tried to wrap up Jahlil Okafor, and Okafor, really the strength, showed through, was able to finish on the three-point shot. It's just the end with a basket and a foul. And those plays right there are clearly fouls that, again, you're not using your nugget. That's really fouls and that things. Those instances of those two instances are primary examples of a tired player. And I think once he got around 3 minutes, it was very difficult. There was no way in the world that Ryan was going to pull him out. And I'm not saying that Ryan is not a great coach. I'm not saying that he didn't do a great job. I just thought that there was a time in the course of that game, especially, well, let's be honest, you know, Frank the Tank was really their primary go-to guy, you know, the primary guy that was getting things done. Unfortunately, Sam Decker did not have the same type of game he had against Kentucky. So, you know, ran their horse as long as they could, and it looks like, again, when they got around the finish line, he tired down. And, you know, it's such a tough job. In terms of coaching, you know, if you look at it, it's such a tough job because as a coach, I've always said this. You have to predict ahead how things are going to play out. It's almost like you have to have 1 foot in the future as well as 1 foot in the present. And also at the same time, being able to manage your guys getting rest and also being able to steal minutes. I think from one standpoint, you look at Coach Mike Krzyzewski. He was rewarded and praised for the fact is that when Jahlil Okafor picked up his second foul, along with Justice Winslow, I believe, had two fouls, he was still able to rest Okafor, keep Winslow in there, and go to a zone to protect him, in which he didn't pick up his third foul and stuff. But still in awe, I thought a couple of times Winslow was out of control and the referees did not blow their whistle at all. But still in awe, being able to manage the time and really keeping a guy like Frank Kaminsky, who, let's be honest, was carrying the load for Wisconsin. Great game in terms of a great run by Wisconsin. I think that clearly, again, when you look at Kaminsky, next level, and I think a lot of people are going to do this. Is Kaminsky a bona fide NBA player? I don't know if he's a lottery pick, which he probably will end up being, but he's not. He might get, just because you're picked as a lottery player, when you're picked and selected in the lottery, doesn't always translate into you being a lottery player. You know, and I like what Kaminsky can do as a seven-footer who's able to put that ball on the floor and execute that drop step. I think that he goes to an organization that allows him to be what he perhaps may be, a sixth or seventh man off the bench. I think Sam Decker is a guy that clearly has a lot more of an upside. I believe he's 6'9", and you're talking about a guy that can put the ball on the floor, shoot the ball, get to the basket. That's very, very effective. And I know a lot of people were saying, you know what, Wisconsin's style of play, being very slow, methodical, really took away from them when Duke took the lead and thus forced them into a situation where they sort of had to accelerate the pace. And it was very difficult for Wisconsin. Well, the same thing could be said, I think, when Duke played against Virginia, tried to speed them up, and thus Virginia was not able to adapt and adjust. And then on the flip side of that, you know, Justice Winslow, I think that, again, when I look at him, lottery player, as a lot of people are saying, a lottery selection that he's being predicted to go, but he's not a lottery player. You know, I mean, if you want any evidence before you think that I'm hating on him, look at Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. He was selected as a lottery player based upon the factors. Are you ready for this? He was selected based on the factors hustle and heart. I'm serious. I really am serious. You know, I'm really serious about that in terms of he was selected based upon the factors that, you know, he was, you know, a guy that hustles. And I've never understood that. You know, you cannot talk about a player that is essentially, you're going to take as a lottery player that has undeveloped skills. I think he's an athlete, but it's the old saying. What's the old saying? He's a jack of all trades, master of none. I think he runs the floor well. He's an athlete. You know, his jumper, you know, he's got it. It's sporadic. But at times he can go to the hole out of control. You know, I mean, that's not a knock against him, but I don't think he's a lottery talent. But he will be selected based upon the fact is that some scouts, some coaches, and GMs will fall so in love. And pretty much I'll say the GMs will fall in love with what they saw in this little run of 4 to 5 games by Justice Winslow. But again, he needs work. And then I think he's an effective player if you pick him in the late first round, second round. That's not going to happen because what happens is you're going to try to get him as soon as you can. And yet the fact is you're going to have to live with it. I mean, look at Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. And this is not a knock against Gilchrist. Look at him with Charlotte. Well, how much of that sort of energy and hustle and heart and all that other cliches you use defining him as a player has really helped the Charlotte Hornets win games? It's not. 347-324-5839, 347-324-5839. I like Tyus Jones. I like him. You know, I question how small, how tall he is. Hit big shots, played very heavy. But I was reading something at John Calipari, who, again, I got so many bones to pick about them. We're going to talk about that later in terms of Hall of Famers. I saw a quote that John Calipari told, you know, in speaking in regards to talking to his players and stuff, he informed them that the NBA is a man's game. It's a man's league. It's a man's game. And if you're not ready to play as a boy, play with men, you need to stay in college. And I look at Tyus Jones. You know, is he a starting point guard in this league? I'm not sure. Is his stock going to be any higher? I don't think so. It's not. Whenever you come back to school, especially when in a national championship, your game is open up for all types of scrutiny. All types. Because he was the MOP, most outstanding player, what else does he need to do? What else does he need to do in terms of, you know, really elevating and advancing his game, you know? That's the whole thing where I'm trying to figure out you know, does he stay? I mean, look at Syracuse. Remember the kid Syracuse, Tyler Ennis? You know, they had that amazing run. They were a number one seed. They get knocked out. You had to go. Had to go. We haven't seen him yet in the NBA. I believe he's in Milwaukee now. He got picked by a bad team that had 19 guards. But we haven't seen him as of yet. So I just think that if you look at a lot of the stuff, you know, in terms of where Duke stands, I mean, Okafor is a done deal. He's going. You know, I mean, clearly. I'd be very surprised if he stayed in school. I'd be very surprised. But Winslow, he's going to take the, you know, again, his stock is very high. Same thing with Tyus Jones. So that could be the flip side of the fact is that when you win, you know, it's unfortunate. Guys have to leave and move on. 347-324-5839. 347-324-5839 is the number. Gerald Brown flying solo momentarily here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Again, you know, so much of the criticism, and I think it's kind of unfair when you look at a lot of the things. Look, in the landscape of college basketball, which, you know, we can go so many ways with this in terms of, you know, what Mike Krzyzewski's been able to do with so much talent. And I think, again, we all seen that, you know, just because you have talent doesn't always mean you can win. You have to have a coaching component with that. And Krzyzewski does a great, great job. His kids buy into it. And he's done a great job. But is he one of the great? Is he one of the greatest coaches of all time? Yes. Is he the greatest coach of all time? Can't do that. Can't do that. Not at all. 347-324-5839. 347-324-5839. So now we're at this point where the NBA playoffs right around the corner, and it's such a beautiful time of the year. A round of applause, because you know, I love it this time of the year with, you know, the NCAA tournament ending up, because we sort of segue into the NBA playoffs. If you stay with the basketball thing, you segue right into the NBA playoffs. And right now we're looking at a race for the playoffs. And I look at Paul George's return for the Pacers, you know, the other night, and he goes in, he scores 13 points. And helping the Pacers dismantle the Miami Heat. And a lot of people saying, oh, you know, this is really going to, you know, sort of, again, really bring the whole, if you will, the momentum shift. It's really going to help the Pacers make the playoffs. And I disagree with that. I really disagree with that. There was no way in the world you can sit up here and tell me with a straight face that this move is predicated on really helping the Pacers get to the playoffs. Because if you look at this team, it's an old team. It's a team that went to multiple conference finals, unfortunately lost to LeBron and the Miami Heat. We all know that. Roy Hibbert has a player option about $14, $15 million. He's definitely going to – he's really going to sit down and he's going to execute that and really – really put that in motion. But then there's also David West, who has another year left on his deal. Movable pieces. George Hill has an abundance of money that's right around sort of maybe a year or two left on that. The Pacers are a team in transition. And I saw this when this first moment, I'd said it before, when the indication that George was coming back and, you know, it was kind of surprising in terms of hearing that Paul George was going to come back. So late in the season, it was really a head-scratcher because I couldn't put my finger on the fact that this is your franchise player. Okay, this is your franchise player. And yet, with these franchise players, you know, what is the rush? You know, what is the rush? You want to make sure. And I came up with the only indication was there's nothing that Paul George is going to do in 6 to 7 games left that you will feel comfortable going into the off season. Like, I didn't understand the rush to get him back out there, to get the rust off. You play 82 games. You can play 82 games. Him playing this week, next week coming up, is not going to do anything different to prepare him for next season. I don't want to see it. But then I started throwing around, Roy Hibbert, as I said, he has a $15 million option for next year. He's going to definitely, it's a player option. As well as David West has a $12 million option. And those are two guys right there that, based upon as an organization, David West is an older player. You know, where are the Pacers right now? And I don't know where exactly this move here. And as I was mentioned, George Hill, he's got about $16 million still to owe to him. About $8 million next year, $8 million the following year. And then he comes off the books. And this is a team that relatively, their top three players, if you will, are making between $16 to $12 million. And, you know, we all understand that. Listen, let's be honest. Roy Hibbert is not a $15, $16 million a year player. So I looked at this move to evaluate how much more can the Pacers really get out of this team? How much more can they get out of it before they decide to say, hey, look, let's blow it up, start all over. We still have George for including next year. You know, we got him pretty much for 4 years. You know, his fourth year, he gets $20 million. I don't see him. It's a player option. I don't see him opting out of that. But start the rebuilding process. Or maybe, and I mean, again, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. Cleveland, we don't know how they are. You know, we don't know what they are. We don't know what they are in terms of battle-tested. They're not. We don't know how they're going to perform come the playoffs. We would like to believe with LeBron, your chances are very good. But nobody else has playoff experience, with the exception of some of the veterans that are there. But they play minimal roles. Sean Marion, James Jones, Mike Miller, some of those guys. But the core guys of that team, aside from LeBron, does not have, you know, and maybe J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, but really prepared for a deep playoff run, that's not the case. You know, Chicago's taking a step back with the whole Derrick Rose situation. Again, you don't know how much is left with Pau Gasol, but still in all, Indiana, aside from this injury, would be a different story. So I think that the reshuffling of the Eastern Conference, you look at this move, and I think that clearly this is a move to evaluate the direction of the team. And I think Larry Bird, instead of saying, you know, we really want to get Paul George back because we want him to get the rust off, he should have just said that. He should have just said that, you know what, we want to see exactly what type of team they may be. And they could be an outstanding playoff team with a healthy Paul George. I think they'd be an outstanding, healthy team. I like the addition of C.J. Miles. I think, you know, Rodney Stuckey really helps them. But this is a team that's been sort of hamstrung by injuries, you know, and seeing exactly what they do. But let's be honest, if they do make the playoffs, how far do they go? You know, that will be the key there. 347-324-5839. 347-324-5839. You know, and so just looking at them as they move forward, be really interesting to see how things materialize for them. And then on the flip side, I Brooklyn Nets, Boston Celtics, Charlotte Hornets, all are in this race. And I'm trying to figure out which one of these teams would be a big surprise in terms of making the playoffs. I mean, Charlotte was so much expected of them. You know, they went from the Bobcats back to the Hornets, Al Jefferson, you know, it was all that. He got hurt. They made the playoffs. And as a organization that's still young, that's the sort of road that you want to take. You want to try to sneak into the playoffs, get there, and then basically be able to move forward. You know, you get there, get your feet wet, and gradually continue to develop moving forward. And this is a team that hasn't been able to do that. It's just making so much sense in terms of how it's going out, you know. You know, it's just all the stuff that's been transpiring. I just don't know. I look at it. It'd be really interesting to see how things play out. Let's bring on the line the outstanding one, Muddy Morphosis, legendary lyricist, Fife Sports Network, Malik Taylor, a.k.a. Fife Dog. All I'm saying is I want a piece of the action. The Fife Sports Network is doing big, big things, kid. I'm just letting you know that. I'm just letting you know that, my friend. You're doing a lot of big things. I see. Okay. I don't want you trying to sound like the dudes hanging out down there on Canal Street and stuff like that. I got you. I don't know about that. yeah. Canal Street, what are those guys? Fife, always a pleasure, man. Definitely got to get into some conversation. We've been talking about, I've been talking about the Duke situation, the championship. I've been talking about the playoffs. Let's switch gears right now, Fife, as, again, I think we have royalty. They have royalty in regards to sports pantheon and music and stuff, outstanding individuals joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Jerry Rice Jr. and his sister, I want to make sure I see the name, Cree Rice, here joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show.
Yes, that's right.
First and foremost, I want to just say first, obviously, ladies first, Laquie, I hope that I'm saying it right, right?
You're saying it right. You got it.
Okay, Quee Rice. Jerry Rice Jr., give us the short version of the name.
The short version? I'm just Jerry Rice Jr. It's not really a short version. It's more of just a suffix, but, you know, it's the same name. But, you know, we're trying our best over here to make my name for myself, and that's the goal so far throughout my career.
Okay, so JR, so we call you JR, but again, glad to have both of you. Gerald Brown, the legendary Fife Dog, joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. I got to ask you, since football has been a fabric of both of your lives, what other sports capture your attention? Quee, first you.
Well, I grew up playing basketball, so I'm a huge basketball and volleyball fan. So, I've always, and I also ran track too. So I kind of like did a lot as far as sports goes as a kid. And I like, even to this day, I still try to keep up on volleyball. I mean, I can't really say I watched March Madness this year. I feel like I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, but I still like always love basketball as well.
You didn't miss anything compared to the bad basketball. JR, what sport outside of football is really sort of, again, capture your attention?
Well, during my free time, I like to play basketball a lot. I like playing basketball. And then growing up, honestly, I didn't even play football until my freshman year of high school. So growing up, I was playing a lot of basketball and baseball. And I actually was a pretty good baseball player and stuff like that,
yeah.
But when it came down to it, making a decision that I really wanted to focus on just football and basketball in high school, that's what I continued to do.
Okay, so again, are we leaning into NBA? I mean, again, we leaning NBA, Quee? I mean, give us a team. You leaning NBA? And please don't say them Lakers or the Golden State Warriors. Come on, I don't want to hear all that. That's a front runner.
You know it's a hometown team. It has to be the Warriors, man. Grew up in the Bay Area, born and raised in the Bay Area. So we go with the home team, the Warriors, at least for me.
Well, okay. I mean, I kind of had a thing for the Kings back in the day, like the Sacramento Kings. But, I mean, I guess Warriors, yeah. I guess the Warriors. But I don't know. I always still got a respect for the Sacramento Kings.
You know, I felt the same way. I mean, I love the Sacramento Kings, again, their brand of basketball. If you will, how ironic is that in terms of really when you talk about the northern part of California for both of you, is the fact is that the Golden State Warriors, if you will, emulate a lot of what, minus the defensive side of the ball, because, I mean, Sacramento didn't play that type of defense, but they emulated that style of basketball, which we saw from the Sacramento Kings with the Jason Williams and the Chris Webber and the Mike Bibby. You know, so, again, it's that type of that kind of basketball and stuff like that. So really interesting to hear about that.
Well, I mean, I think for the Kings, I think they just got one or two pieces away. You know, they got a young, talented guy in DeMarcus Cousins, you know, very talented, came from Kentucky, you know. Then they got Rudy Gay. And I think up-and-coming that Ray McCollum guy, he's going to end up being a very good player. So I think they're a couple pieces away. They just need to find that chemistry and gel all together. And, you know, hopefully with the new coach and stuff like that, they can bring it all together and look forward or bring some momentum. End this season on a high note and bring some momentum for next year.
Yeah, I don't know how big those pieces are. I have to say that, J.R. Them pieces might be huge because, I mean, you go through three coaches in less than 6 months. That's not a really good setup right there. But hopefully things will turn around as they're moving into a new arena as well.
After having a shoulder injury, which cost you to miss the entire season with the Washington Redskins, talk about getting ready this off season with OTA starting in a couple of weeks.
Well, it was definitely a process. I got hurt August 7th, and that was actually my first surgery I've ever had, knock on wood, hopefully no more, but playing football. So having my first surgery and battling that, it was definitely a mental task that I had to overcome, that adversity. But now that I'm about 7 months into it, my shoulder's pretty much healed up, so now it's back to the training. So when it came down to it, I flew back home. I'm right now currently in San Francisco. Well, Menlo Park to be exact, with my dad, currently staying with my dad right now. So we've been getting training. I've been going to that hill 3 times a week and, you know, working out every day and then throwing after. So it's been, you know, double days and things like that. But, you know, in order to get out something great, you got to put in as well. So as much as you put in is what you get out. So this is definitely what we're doing since I've been out here.
Right.
Yeah. He is Jerry Rice Jr. as well as Quee Rice. Joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Gerald Brown, Fife Dog, 347-324-5839. Now, I got this track, and I was sitting back, and Quee, I was listening to it, and I thought it was outstanding. And I'm not sure that you're sitting up here just again, you know, just saying this stuff.
Wow,
but
thank you.
I thought it was really interesting as we're playing. I think it's playing in the background. I think it's playing in it. But I want to ask you, you have the song out right now called Everything Roses. Talk about why that title and how you got into the music business.
Ooh, okay. Well, I guess to start, the way I got into the music business is I actually started out singing national anthems when I was a kid at, like, Niners games, Golden State Warriors games. So I went around doing anthems for a number of years, and I was also in a girl band for a while. And so when I was in college, I would be flying back and forth between D.C. I went to Georgetown and back home in the Bay Area to be with my group. And then I did the solo thing, had a single with David Banner some years back called Rev It Up, shot a video for that. So honestly, it's been an ongoing thing. I mean, I think we're like at, you know, maybe 10 years now into this. I mean, I also focused on school and graduated. But so now since I'm done with school, I'm hitting music on like 150, 200%. It's my passion. And Everything Is Roses came about. Just literally, I got with some dope producers out here in L.A. called The Stereotypes and got started writing. And it's about just a relationship that's not really working out, you know, but you're trying to stick it out and you say to yourself that, oh, everything is roses, but it's not really roses. So, like, I just wanted to deliver a fresh vibe, something that kind of had a swing to it. It does feel a little Euro at times, but, I mean, I was influenced by so many, like, beautiful voices like Sade's and Erykah Badu's and the Lauryn Hills. So I just really wanted to capture that in the song a little bit.
Yeah, because it seems like, again, your style and stuff and just listening to the song and stuff, just very, very different. And, again, very, very entertaining voice that you have.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited about it. So, you know, we released the video a couple of months ago, and I'm working on a new visual for the follow-up single and going to get this EP out. And, I'm just working on a lot of great stuff out here in L.A. I'm having a blast with it.
Okay.
Well, good luck.
Well, Fife.
Good luck with that.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah. I was saying good luck with that because it's refreshing to see somebody making a lane for themselves in this industry, which can be very fickle. But good luck with that, most definitely.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. That's just for you. Sure.
And so that was the thing I was really going to sort of segue to, is the fact is that, again, Fife, you having established yourself in the music business and stuff, and just looking at that again, it just really, just like you had said before, in terms of really just seeing somebody create their own lane and stuff like that. Fife, what is I guess obviously we know the challenges and stuff like that, but really getting in the game, what is the key to having staying power, Fife?
Being yourself, not following any trends. You know what I mean? That's basically what it is every day, all day. Because when you look at the industry right now as we see it, it's a bunch of people duplicating each other. And it's very important that you stand out like a green thumb. You know what I mean? So
so far,
and you're already making a name for yourself. It's going to work out. I see it. You know what I mean?
No, thank you so much, Fife. That's so dope. Thank you. Yeah, no, you're right. You just have to really stay true to yourself, be your own individual out here, because people want to get on quick and they go along with these trends, but it's like, you know, I want to stay around. I want to stick around. Like, I love music. I love it. And it's, you know, you don't want to sell yourself short for a quick rise. You know what I mean? So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. So having a famous father who is the greatest wide receiver. Oh, I'm sorry. Having a famous father who is the greatest wide receiver of all times, what has been the best way you both have managed making a name for yourselves? Jerry Rice Jr., you first, and then Kwee.
Okay.
Well, definitely, you know, having a father to that stature, someone that's been there and done that, and gone beyond that, and to be labeled, you know, the greatest receiver of all time, I definitely have what I think is a good trait. Well, one of the great traits is having the mental knowledge of the side of football and having the, I guess, the attributes of being dedicated and working very hard at what I do in order to prepare myself for the season. Because a lot of it, you know, obviously on Sundays is what we show for it, but it's the leading up to it. It's what you're doing in the off season. It's what you're doing at practice, what you're doing after practice, and all those things add up. So able to have an example of somebody who is doing that on a day-to-day basis really show me the way of how the game should be done and how you should prepare yourself in order to showcase on a Sunday. Because people think, you know, Sunday is supposed to be the time when you have fun. That's game. That's game time. That's putting all your work and show it out there to the fans and to other people what you've been working on. But before leading up to that, that's really the hard work. So that's a attribute that I'll carry on until, you know, I'm done playing and hopefully teach it to my kids and keep it going, you know.
Right. I totally agree with Jerry. I mean, just from growing up and, you know, seeing my dad and just how hard he worked, it just, you know, you have to work hard for whatever it is that you want. From him, he was an example for me just to keep my tenacity and just to stay at it and work hard. You have to put the work in because it shows for itself. Like me and my brother, we definitely have faced obstacles because, you know, a lot of times people assume things are handed to us because of, you know, who we are. But literally, my brother, like, he busts his butt off. He works harder than anyone I know. And I try to do the same thing and just work hard because at the end of the day, the work, you know, it shows itself. It stands for itself. And just to stay dedicated, stay positive and humble, and people respect that, and just do what you love.
Yeah. Well said.
Sure.
Jerry Rice Jr. and Kwee Rice joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Fife Dog, Gerald Brown, 347-324-5839. Talk about learning to play the wide receiver position, especially at the NFL level.
Oh, I mean, this is definitely a constant learning process. I mean, I feel like I've learned so much, especially now getting to this level. I mean, especially, and it's not even, you know, just working on stuff myself. It's watching what other people do. Like, I've had a year, unfortunately, being with the DeSean Jackson, being with the Pierre Garçon, and, you know, trying to emulate, you know, what they got the best or what they show, and trying to mold it all together. Because even like I said, I was in Canada for a week. I was with the Montreal Alouettes, and that's when I came up and I saw, you know, Chad Ochocinco, and, like, I learned a lot of things from all these type of people, you know, regardless of where they came from, where they're at, where they landed right now. So putting those pieces together and also listening to coaches and listening to what my what my dad and stuff told me, and watching his old tapes. I have old film of my dad, you know, when he was with the Niners during practice. So there's a lot of mental size to it too. And then once you go out there, you try to emulate what you saw and put it into the works. And so you just try to perfect your craft.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
What's the goal for the near future? Quee first, then Jerry Rice Jr.
People can find me on my social media is Hey It's Quee. That's HeyItsQui, like Hey It's Quee. That's my social media, my Instagram, my Twitter. And I also have it's actually my SoundCloud as well. I have music on there and also on YouTube. So definitely follow me on my social media and stay up to date on everything that I'm doing. The goals for the near future. It's an awesome time right now because I'm creating and the creative process is so cool and exciting, but I'm really looking forward to just performing and getting on a tour soon, maybe this summer, maybe this fall. So that's what we're working on right now is just getting the performance element all lined up. So I'm really excited about that.
Right.
And obviously long-term goals, I just want to be able to perform in like Madison Square Garden, like that would be great. But right now, you know, we've got to focus on the day-to-day, but still stay inspired for sure. But there's a lot of work to be done.
Right.
Well said.
And then for me, I mean, I started mini goals, things like that. So my first goal right now, some very small steps. I'm just trying to do whatever I can to make this team, whether it's be a receiver, special teams, kick return, punt return. And then when I want to look back at my life and when it's all said and done, I don't want to just settle to be the guy who's like, oh, he was on a team, but he, you know, he's a third receiver, second receiver. He didn't really play that much, but you know, he was on the roster. I want to make an impact. I want to make my own debt, you know, on my own debt in this football game, so that when people look up my dad's name, they see all his accolades and things like that, but they look at my name, I got my own accolades, I got my own things I had going for myself. So I think that, you know, in life, we have one chance on this earth, you know, so I might as well strive to be big and do the best thing I can. So my dad, you know, always instilled, like, if I was going to flip burgers, I better be the best burger flipper in the whole land. So, you know, I got to strive to do something great. So that's what I plan on doing, or at least very working hard towards that, because even if it doesn't work out like that, if I could look in the mirror and say, hey, I did all I can do, then I'll be okay with that. Doesn't matter if I catch one ball, 1,000 balls, one touchdown, 200 touchdowns. If I'm satisfied with my efforts, then I can walk away with the game happy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's very well said. I will say this, and again, Fife, somebody that's, again, has really had success and stuff, and really from the music standpoint and just in general, what words of wisdom would you have for both of them, Fife, as we close out?
Oh, same thing I said earlier. Be yourselves, work hard, take no prisoners, take no shorts, and succeed. Pretty much that's it. Mm-hmm. And please, please, please let your father know that he is definitely my favorite wide receiver ever. Most definitely.
Oh, good job.
I'll definitely let him know. I'll
Thank
open
you.
The door right now
yeah.
and let him know.
Throw that.
And also let your dad know that we had the pleasure of having him on the show. I think it was 2 weeks. Actually, I think it was really after it was – well, 2 weeks prior to the announcement that he had been inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I think we had him with our executive producers Penny Hardaway and Charles Oakley, and they have been talking about golfing. You know, they were talking about getting up there in the Bay Area and golfing because Penny gets out and about. I think he goes up to Reno up there for the big golf outing and stuff like that. So I know they had talked about doing some golf, and Oak's back has been really messed up. But definitely let your dad know that Penny Hardaway definitely is still interested in getting out there golfing. He's coaching AAU basketball now, but it's definitely something he's looking forward to doing in the near future.
So,
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, my dad golfs every day.
That's what he does every day. That's his new thing.
Like, I think his main goal, he's trying to become a PGA. Tour, so I mean that's what he's working on now. So I'll definitely let him know that.
Yeah, I saw him, and that fact that I was out in Vegas at MJ's golf about three years ago, I seen him out there. So he was very, very competitive out at Michael Jordan's golf, Celebrity Golf Invitation in Las Vegas, and he was very, very competitive. But Jerry Rice Jr., listen. Best wishes towards you, my friend. Again, keep working hard, and I definitely make sure that, again, just keep striving for your goals and really go after them again, because I think it's always been said, again, it's better to try and fail than not try at all. So you definitely make sure that you do that. And, Quee, listen, the song is fire, Everything Roses. Listen, continue success in all that you're doing. And one thing I want both of y'all to do, I want y'all to promise us this right here. Come back on the show. We'll talk a little bit more of basketball and stuff. I want to even get y'all on SiriusXM NBA. And I don't want to see y'all walking around with no shades at night and stuff like that. Just yet. Jerry Rice Jr., especially down there in Chocolate City. I want to see you walking around with no shades at night.
All right, I got you. Yeah, I'm going to stay low-key.
And Quee, make sure again, you come to New York and you be on the big stage at Madison Square Garden. You're not wearing the shades and all that other stuff. And just, again, forget
night.
The little people.
Ooh, I'm going to remember that. Never.
Well,
never.
Thank you guys very much for having me message on the show.
Us.
So we appreciate this.
Anytime, our pleasure. And, you know, again, great friend to the show, Chuck, man, is, again, he's my man, 50 grand and stuff, and definitely nothing but love for him and making sure. But, again, continued success in all that you do. And, look, we definitely look forward to talking to you down the line.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I appreciate everything. And one quick thing. We got me, Chuck, matter of fact, and we got our boy Paul George and his brother. We're all working on a product. It's called Pros. Is a clothing brand, so we got that going. Pros better my game, and it's not just a clothing brand, it's a lifestyle, you know, professional reward out of sports. So we're trying to get all these kids involved, whether it's high school, you know, getting recruited to D1, and it comes from anywhere. So we got that going. So in the next 2 months, look out for that, because it's just a lifestyle that we're trying to get of people trying to make it to the pro level. And, you know, so we got Paul George affiliated with it, and his brother and me and Chuck working on all that. So you guys keep in there and look for that in the next couple of months.
All right. Well, listen, make sure. You have the reason to come back on the show so we can make sure we talk about that. And the crazy thing is I'm going to the Pacers game tomorrow night, unfortunately, to see them practice against the New York Knicks. and again, C.J. Miles and stuff. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and see that practice that they're going to have against Fife beloved Knicks and stuff. And definitely let us know and keep us abreast on everything that's developing with the clothes. So definitely we'll be looking out for that and look forward to talking to down the line.
All right, yeah, that's definitely great. Yeah, I appreciate y'all once again. And, yeah, just look forward to that and look out for that in the next couple of months.
Always
Thanks,
a pleasure.
Guys.
Anytime. Quee Rice and Jerry Rice Jr. making a name for themselves. Everything Roses. You check out the song. Jerry Rice Jr. down there with the Washington Redskins. Nothing but success for them. Very humble young people, Fife. I was very impressed with that. Very, very humble young people, man. And, you know, again, that's just one of those great things that, again, you know, when you speak to people and you hear, you know, their dad is a legend. But, I, you know, Fife, I often wonder about that in terms of the pressure that goes along with the expectations, especially when, you know, your name is Jerry Rice Jr., you know what I'm saying? It's like you got to be that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a wide receiver, so that's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, but hopefully it works out for him, so he can hail to the Redskins.
Oh, look
me?
At you! Look, come on, stop it! I don't understand this about you, Fife.
Let me tell you something. I'm not a Redskins fan, but I used to go out there to the games when they first moved to FedEx Field. And, actually at the old RFK, there used to be a guy outside playing hit up to the Redskins on the saxophone, but he used to jazz it up. And me and Jerobi used to be throwing mad dollars in his trumpet case because he was so nice with it. So that's why the song came to my head like that, you know what I'm saying? But he used to get busy. You had to be there. It was dope, though.
Yeah, so Fife, let's go back, man, because Fife Sports Network is a way of life. You got to follow Fife on Twitter, Instagram. You roots all up in the shot. Y'all shining right now. I'm just going to let you know, you're shining. You were at the Poway Jam Fest. You sit there in the cut and really just sitting there again plotting, and you're putting things together. Talk about the experience of the McDonald's All-American game. What was your thoughts about it?
I mean, it was fun. It was a great atmosphere. A lot of the young people in there were having a good time, and I got to see a lot of great players that you'll see in a few months playing Division I basketball, obviously. Rick Brunson's son, Jalen Brunson, he'll be playing at Villanova. He's nice. Antonio Blakeney, he's going to LSU. He'll be playing alongside Ben Simmons, who's the number one player in the nation from Montverde Academy, playing under Coach Boyle, originally from Australia. He's a beast. Ivan Rabb looks like he's going to decide between University of Arizona and Cal Berkeley. And then you have Jaylen Brown from Georgia, who might just go to Cal Berkeley himself. I don't think he's decided just yet, but I believe he's the number two player in the nation. He's a monster. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with. But shout out to Vashti with Duke winning last night. There's a kid named Luke Kennard who averaged over 36 points in high school, and he could stroke it. He's going to Duke, so what are you going to do? But there's a lot of people to look forward to that I had the chance to enjoy while judging the dunk contest with Cappy Pondexter and Jerry Stackhouse and Jabari Parker. So, you know, it was a real great time, and I got to interview Jabari, Cappy, and Jerry. So look out for that coming real, real soon. You know what I mean? So it was a fun time, man.
Yeah, I used to have the biggest crush on Cappy Pondexter. So, again, I was very surprised that you tell me that. She was shining. I saw her sitting there, and, I mean, Cappy has been a regular on the show in the past, and I got her to basically acknowledge my crush one time because she was saying she loved us and stuff, and I was like, no, woman, you ain't going to come on my show and say you love everybody. I love you. And that's what she said. She loved me. So that stayed with me. That has stayed with me. But I want to get your thoughts on just really, you know, Duke winning this national championship and, you know, all this stuff. And I was really surprised. In fact, if I had started the show off, I was really bothered by the fact is that we've seen so many times in pro sports or just in sports in general, from baseball to NBA, where officials or the head official comes out and says, yeah, that was a blown call. They didn't just, you know, they missed this. And it's nothing that's done to rectify the wrong. And in this case last night, where that ball that tips off the fingertips of Justice Winslow for Duke, which should have been Wisconsin ball, we see it. And yet the head of the supervisor, the head of the officials, basically John Adams, said that, you know what, they didn't use the same feed as the TV. So they didn't get a chance to see the angles we saw. And I thought that was crazy because this is the Super Bowl of college basketball. You know, what are they looking at?
I don't know. I think that's bogus. There's no way you can see what we saw, as well as when Justice Winslow stepped out of bounds. So it was two differences with Justice Winslow. But to be honest, gentlemen, like I said, that's bogus if they're saying that they didn't use the angles that we saw on national TV for the Super Bowl of college basketball. Bogus, bogus, bogus. However, I'm not going to take anything away from Duke because the defense was superior and Sam Becker had a bad game and Wisconsin made some questionable decisions, you know, for the last 6 minutes of the game, to be honest. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to blame it totally on the refs, but if they're going to come out and say they didn't use those same angles that we saw, that's ridiculous. That's totally ridiculous.
Yeah. I didn't appreciate that at all, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of them just coming out saying that really bothered me. And I just thought it was just something that was really interesting to see how that all played out. And then, you know, this whole notion about Justin Winslow, he's probably going to go to the league. And I said this before, and I don't want to sound like I hate it, but Fife, I don't know if you agree or disagree with me on this. He's a lottery player. He's probably going to be picked in the lottery. But at the end of the day, he's going to be – I don't know if he's a lottery type of player. He's not. He is a kid – I see him as another version of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Energy, plays hard, all those things. But, again, suspect jump shot. He can get to the basket. That doesn't work on the next level, Fife. And I'm not going to spend I'm not going to spend a lottery pick on a kid that might not develop into nothing more than just an energy guy. Agree or disagree?
I agree with you, Gerald. I agree that he runs the floor well. He plays very good defense. You know, he has a nose for the ball, but that jump shot is definitely there's a lot to be a desire with that jump shot. And at the next level, it's not going to work. And you hit it right on the nail when you compared him to Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, somebody who I watched since high school. I didn't get to see Winslow other than last year's McDonald's game that I attended. But I saw Michael Kidd-Gilchrist play in high school, as well as that 1 year at Kentucky where they won the title, just like Justice right now. But I think one more year would definitely work for him and his jump shot. And then maybe we could really talk about his wallet piece being big time. You know what I mean? Because if he goes into the draft, I could see him late first round, maybe second round being picked.
No, he's going to be a lottery pick, Fife. They're talking about lottery pick. And I don't think that he can come back, Fife. I mean, it's the same thing they're saying about Tyus.
I meant to say what his worth is right now. That's what I meant.
Right, okay, got you.
You know, but, I could see him being a late first rounder, early second rounder. Anything before that, I don't know. It might be a little struggle depending on where he goes, who he backs up, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah, he's definitely gonna be. I mean, some people are saying as high as three that he would be predicted to go
I could tell you, the top five in my book, and that's Okafor, Towns, Russell, Moutier, Cauley Stein, and then after that, it's kind of we'll see.
Yeah, it's just going to be one of those things. Here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Fife's on Gerald Brown, 347-324-5839. And people are going to fall in love with that. And I think, unfortunately, he's going to have to move on. Because if he decides to stay, his game will be scrutinized. And that's the same thing for Tyus Jones. Your stock is probably going to be as high as it has ever been. And if Jones leaves, things will be different if Jahlil Okafor leaves. You got a guy that you were officially able to, dump the ball down into the post. That changed a lot of things for that team. If they don't have a sufficient guy coming in to replace Okafor, something that's going to change things significantly. Justin Winslow has to leave. And especially the sad thing about it is it's nothing against him at all. But GMs are going to be in love because they saw what he did in this NCAA tournament run, and they're automatically going to gravitate to that and say, you know what, rather than pick that kid at the late first round to a team a la like a San Antonio Spurs where he could come in and learn the game and not be thrust into an immediate role of having to play, he's going to be taken very high. And somebody's going to have to roll the dice and see if that kid can ultimately turn into a potential franchise player, which, like I said before, Michael K. Gilchrist, that's the same thing that happened to Gilchrist. Comes off the winning the championship, people are sitting up there saying, hey, we got to take him. And I've never seen a guy that was drafted on heart because, you know, all the stuff that he did in college and stuff like that is basically what he's doing, what he's been doing in the pros. You know, I'm not taking a guy that high, but, I mean, I think Tyus Jones got to leave, and I think that at the same time, I really believe that Justice Winslow has to leave, and we all know that Okafor, like you said, he's on your top list. And then on the flip side of that fight, I like Frank Kaminsky, but Frank Kaminsky, to me, at the next level, might be a guy that's in the rotation, a sixth or seventh man off the bench. Love the footwork, but I don't think that he's strong enough physically to be able to endure the banging. But at the same time, how many fives what we see in the game today that play down there with their back to the basket? He is a traditional four, a Euro type of big man that can step out on the perimeter, shoot the ball very well. I see him as perhaps not a franchise player at all.
I see him at the three or the four at the next level, whether he starts or comes off the bench. And I agree with you. I see him coming off the bench unless he gets in that weight room and works on that upper body, and he makes sure those legs are not noodles at the next level. He's definitely going to have to work out. And the thing is, there's no turning back because he's been there for all 4 years. But
right.
the upside to Kaminsky is that he's gotten better every year. So let's hope the same can be said at the next level.
Yeah. I think he will be. Again, he's perfected his craft, and I think he's doing some great things. Now, Sam Decker is a guy that I really, really enjoy. I think, again, if his measurements check out to be a legit 6'9", you're talking about a 6'9 guy that can put the ball on the floor, be able to get to the basket, and shoot the ball. Yes, he did not have the greatest of great games, but one thing I liked about him, Fife, is the fact that from an offensive standpoint, and really that's one of the benefits of a Wisconsin's offense, is guys really move without the ball, and that was very impressive to me to see a guy like Sam Decker move without the ball effectively. And as I said before, being able to put the ball on the floor at his size, I'm going to take the Sam Decker game against Kentucky over the Sam Decker game against Duke. I just think that, again, he is a legit lottery pick, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's taken anywhere between that top 10.
He's definitely part of my all-tournament team. I definitely enjoyed seeing him play, even against North Carolina. You know, that hurt, but you got to give props where props is due, and I've always been one to call a spade, and he is a beast to me. And although
yes,
he had a bad game last night, I expect him to put in work in this NBA. I do.
Yeah. 347-324-5839. Fife, I want to get your thoughts and opinions on some of the things. You know, we're looking at the playoffs in the NBA level. We look at the Brooklyn Nets, the Boston Celtics, Charlotte Hornets, all which have a realistic chance of making the playoffs, along with the Indiana Pacers. Which team would be the biggest surprise making the playoffs, in your opinion?
All three of them. No, I'm just playing. Actually, the biggest surprise would be, for me, Boston, because they've had a rough season. But at the same time, Brad Stevens has done a great job since the All-Star pick with this team, especially not having a Rondo and some health issues have arisen. He's done a great job. And a lot of people will probably overlook Boston like I have, but he's done a great job with what he has on that roster. No more Rondo, no more Jeff Green, just a few players. Sullen just getting back from his injury, and they have a chance to make the playoffs. And, you know, we all can sit here and say, well, it's the East. Anything can happen. Anybody could make the playoffs if you're in the East. But let's take the injuries. Let's take the midseason trades, you know, or what have you, into consideration and look at the job that Brad Stevens has done. And you got to appreciate greatness. And right now, I wish he was up for Coach of the Year, because I definitely give it to him. But we all know Coach Bud in Atlanta will get that. But I'm most surprised that Boston has a chance to do what they're doing.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things. And, I mean, again, kudos to them to see exactly where they go. Paul Millsap really just got a chance. They avoided an injury scare with Millsap, who's sitting out two games. And I'd be smart. It might make sense to sit him out for a little bit longer, dealing with an injured shoulder, sprained shoulder. Fife, you can't afford to have Millsap not be 100%. But if he's not able to play, if he's not able to play at 100%, Fife, how vulnerable does he make the Atlanta Hawks?
Well, I honestly thought they were vulnerable regardless, and I only say that because of the experience factor of the whole team in the postseason. You know what I mean? But if he's definitely not 100%, it could even be worse for them going into the playoffs. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But just the experience factor of the whole team, it, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they lose second or semifinal round. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think that, you know, it's just one of the things. And I've said before, I would, you know, I hope that Atlanta Hawks fans, you know, really don't hold it against that team, depending on if they don't make the NBA Finals. You know, especially the fact that it takes away from the great season that they had. You know, I hope that people embrace that and really look at that and enjoy it. You know, the Chicago Bulls had a loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers on the road the other day. How much of that loss on Sunday, Fife, really shows that once again, or I wouldn't say once again, but the road to the NBA Finals goes through Cleveland. Agree or disagree?
I honestly think it's up in the air. You know, when you look at the roster that Cleveland has, yeah, it's easy to say, yeah, it goes through Cleveland, but it's the East. You know what I mean? If it was all about the roster that they have, then we wouldn't be talking about the great season that ATL has had. You know what I mean? So it is definitely up in the air in the East. It could go through Atlanta. It could go through Cleveland. It could go through Chicago, depending on how healthy Derrick Rose will be. And it could also go through Toronto, even though they fell off a little bit compared to how they started the season. You know what I mean? But there you have four teams right there where it could go through. And then Paul George just made his return. So you never know with Indiana. And then Washington fell off a little bit. So it's really six teams. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm not going to just say it's going to go through Cleveland automatically, even though, you know, LeBron has the most experience out of most of the stars in the Eastern Conference. You know what I mean? But, I guess it can go through Cleveland, but I'm not just going to sip the Cleveland Kool-Aid just yet.
I am. I think that they're clicking on all cylinders, and I think that what they have in LeBron, and I think that they've been able to play through the injuries, really the health of Kevin Love not being 100%, and really Iman Shumpert, and I think Timothy Mozgov has been unbelievable. I think just those factors right there, you know, really showcases that it's going to go through that it's going to go through basically Cleveland, hands down. You know, I don't think that that will definitely be something where I'd be very, very surprised if it didn't. Fife, you know, I got something on my mind, and I got a bone to pick, man, and I'm sorry, man, but I got to get your thoughts on this. I thought it was just a sheer travesty that what took place. The Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame, made their announcement as they normally do at the Final Four, and congratulations to all the individuals that were inducted into the upcoming 2015 class of the Basketball Hall of Fame. But Fife, I don't want to sound like a hater, but Fife, I'm struggling with the notion that John Calipari, the head coach of Kentucky, is really a Hall of Fame coach.
Well,
why I'm struggling
that?
With that, Fife. Well, I mean, a great recruiter. I think he's recruited a ton of but he only has one championship to his credit. He has taken three organizations, if you will. The eye test has said, even though they were vacated, he's taken UMass, Memphis, and Kentucky to the Final Four. But, again, he only has one championship to show for it. And he coaches in a weak conference. I mean, it's a football conference.
All right, let me say this. Do you have a problem with Jimmy Boeheim being a Hall of Famer? Because he only has one title.
But you think about, first of all, longevity. He's been in there a long time. More wins. I mean, you think about it again. Before this whole situation where they took 100 wins away, that really stands alone by itself. And he did it in an era where he was a part of a conference that we saw born that sort of grew into one of the best conferences of all of college basketball.
Right. Well,
so
his accolades alone
warrants him to get there.
I agree with you as far as Jimmy Boeheim playing in the tough Big East, being there for the longest. I agree, but at the same time, okay, Calipari plays in the SEC. This is true. Weak conference. It's a football conference. We all know that. But he's taken UMass to the Final Four with Marcus Camby. He's taken Memphis to the Final Four with Derrick Rose and Tyreek. Well, not Tyreek, but Derrick Rose. He's taken Kentucky to the Final Four and won a title. Almost won last year. You know what I mean? So I think he's definitely putting the work, and just off of his recruiting alone, I think he should be. What other coaches you know would take Padilla? You remember that backcourt at UMass, Padilla, and what was the other kid's name?
Carmelo Travieso. I think it was Edgar Padilla and Travieso. So,
right.
I understand that.
Other coaches would even think of them. You know, he led Dante Bright. He led them to the Final Four. Memphis, he's been doing it for a long time as well. Now, the only down part of his career was when he tried to go to the NBA. It didn't work out. It's almost like Steve Spurrier. It didn't work out in the NFL. You know what I mean? But I think he definitely belongs. I do.
I don't.
He has a lot of wins. But you said the same thing about Bobby Knight, and he's the last coach to go undefeated. So...
Yeah,
you know.
I just don't think that he's there. And, I mean, my biggest gripe here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Gerald Brown, Fife Dog, 347-324-5839. My biggest gripe has been the fact is that basketball is the only professional sport, the NBA, excuse me, that does not have their own, per se, Hall of Fame. You know, college basketball has their Hall of Fame. Basketball is such a broad basketball Hall of Fame, and I think that is so difficult because,
That I agree with. That I agree with. He should be in the college basketball Hall of Fame, if anything.
Yes, Fife, and that's where I have a big problem because, for example, there's a guy like Kevin Johnson, the mayor of Sacramento, an unbelievable player in his own right. He got snubbed. And, you know, John Calipari, make the argument. Okay, I understand that. But, Fife, where's the argument that's made for Dikembe Mutombo being considered a Hall of Famer? I have a problem with that. I'm sorry. I have a problem with that with Dikembe Mutombo. And I think a lot of that is done. Is it predicated on the fact is what he did in terms of really off the court and stuff like that in terms of helping and trying, you know, do all the stuff that he's building the hospitals. But, I mean, Fife, he scored 11,000 points, Fife.
I think it's 60% that what he did off the court, why he's getting to go into the Hall of Fame. I really do. But as far as his point production, we all know he was all defense. He wasn't the big man that you were going to call plays for. You know what I mean?
No.
He wasn't.
Right.
So I think 60% of why he's making the Hall of Fame is for what he did off the court. Absolutely.
Fife, he was never all first team in college. He made all first NBA first team. He never made all NBA first team at all. The closest he came was in 2001 when he made the second team. He's an 8-time right. All-Star. He won Defensive Player of the Year 4 times. He was three times all defense first team. Only 3 times. 3 times second team. He led the league in rebounds and shot blocks. 3 times. He led the league in rebound in 2 times. He led the league in block shots 3 times. This is a guy that averaged 9 points, 10 rebounds, and 2 blocks per game. I mean, almost 3 rebounds. I mean, five. What are we going to see next? Are we headed to a situation where we're going to perhaps maybe see a guy like Sean Bradley get into the Hall of Fame? I mean, I'm being honest. I mean, like, you know, listen, I understand Ralph Sampson with the injury he had and stuff and never being the same after that. I understand that. I totally get that. But Fife, Ralph Sampson was not a Hall of Famer. His career was marred by injuries. There's no way. I mean, you might be able to make a case and say Sean Bradley deserves to be in the NBA Hall of Fame. He averaged 8 points a game. He averaged 6 rebounds, and he averaged 2.5 blocks a game. You know, he was a blocks leader in 97. You know, where's this whole notion that I don't understand how we are picking these guys for the Basketball Hall of Fame when you have a guy like Kevin Johnson, to just name one guy off the top of my head, that is not considered, especially if we're talking about the unbelievable player he was on the basketball court, Fife. I have a big problem with that. I have a huge problem.
I totally agree with you on the Mutombo bit, and I agree with you that Kevin Johnson should have been in the Hall of Fame. He should have been in the Hall of Fame. But I'll tell you how I feel. Sean Bradley was funny, but I'm telling you right now, what you said about that was very real. But here's what I would have a problem with in the future. If Dikembe Mutombo could get in the Hall of Fame with those numbers, you better put Grant Hill and Tracy McGrady in there in the years to come. Allen Iverson as well. No excuse.
I agree with you.
If you're going to put Dikembe in there, you better put those three in there, or I'm going to have a problem. I need to be part of that committee.
I agree with you. I mean, Kevin Johnson was a 3-time NBA All-Star, 4-time All-NBA second team. And, I mean, let's be honest. He played in the time where the NBA Western Conference guards were like what they are now, very, very competitive. Again, most improved player.
He was one of the smallest with the biggest hearts. Boy can play.
He averaged 17 points a game, almost 10 assists a game. And, and then what he's done off the court, this is a man that helped save – basketball in Sacramento. I just have a problem with that. And I mean, look, it's no disrespect to John Calipari, no disrespect to Dikembe Mutombo, but I look at certain guys like I'm happy that Spencer Haywood got in. And all those that don't know the story about Spencer Haywood, he's the first guy that really challenged the NBA in terms of being able to go from high school or basically be able to go minus, 4 years of college, go straight to the NBA. And he was a guy that, again, I think they made a mistake some past few years ago, thought he was in, and he got the information wrong, and he wasn't selected, so he finally got in. And also JoJo White, I think that these are guys that I think really were long overdue. You're talking about JoJo White, that was really instrumental piece to all the success with the Celtics and stuff like that. So I'm just happy for those two guys along with the others.
Yeah, the thing with JoJo White, there's so many Celtic greats that we always talk about. He pretty much got lost in the shuffle and really and truly shouldn't have. And that was the issue with JoJo White, but I'm totally glad he's in. And don't get me wrong, I didn't really get to see, the eye test on JoJo White like that. I'm a little too young. But I saw enough footage to say, yo, that was a bad boy. Absolutely. So I'm definitely glad he and Spencer Haywood is in. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and then on top of that,
they have to do better.
Yes, and I just don't understand it where, it's one of those things. I'm having a hard time with it. But I mean, here's a guy that JoJo West, two-time NBA champion, Finals MVP in '76, a seven-time NBA All-Star again. Second, you know, two-time All-NBA second team. He's had his jersey retired. I mean, he's won gold medals in the Olympics and stuff. And, again, outstanding player. And then, like I said before about Spencer Haywood, also former great Tommy Heinsohn, longtime referee Dick Pavetta, a guy who recently retired. You also have former head coach George Ravelin, college coach, as well as WNBA great Lisa Leslie, as well as former Kentucky University and ABA great Louis Dampier. Australian coach Lindsey Gaze and the late John Isaac make up this year's class. Fife as a whole, what are your thoughts on the whole overall class?
I mean, it's okay. I'm glad Lisa Leslie is in there. She did a lot of work for the women's game, most definitely. But I'm sure there's a number of people out there that should have been in and are still waiting, and I'd like to hear their names. The class is just okay to me. I give it a C+.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, I'm happy that Louis Dampier and JoJo White and Spencer Haywood and some of these other guys are in there. But, the first person that comes to mind, and some of these guys, I'm thinking about guys like Kevin Johnson, who was actually a mayor. And not to say that that carries any weight or anything like that, but some of these guys that have been really not on that list, and it's just just really some of the names that just jump off the page to me in terms of some of the guys. I mean, you can make a strong argument that maybe Buck Williams could possibly have gotten in. You look at some of the guys like Zelmo Beatty, longtime basketball player, not getting in, and I don't know. I mean, is Mark Jackson a Hall of Famer? I mean, does Mark Jackson deserve to be in there, and, with Mark, in terms of Mark Jackson and stuff, does he deserve to be, there as an NBA All-Star, Hall of Famer and stuff? So it's a lot of guys that are on that list, and it would be very interesting. I think, Lou Hudson and some of the great things he's done, Marcus Johnson, some of the guys like that, be really interested in George McGinnis. I think George McGinnis, you're talking about these ABA players, it'd be very interesting. So I would have to give the class, I'm sorry, probably a C-. I think Lisa Leslie, deserves to be in there, rightfully so. But I don't understand it. And, look, Calipari could have waited a little bit longer, and I just don't see this importance of having him there. But, again, it would be a lot easier if the NBA decided to have their own type of, their own type of Hall of Fame and stuff. So definitely be something to really be paying attention down the line. Fife, what's your bottom line for tonight?
My bottom line for tonight is congratulations to the Duke Blue Devils.
You know what hurts me.
But give props where props is due. Coach K, definitely number two on Coach Mount Rushmore right now. Most definitely. Got to give it to him on that one. So that's my bottom line for tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to stay away from that. I think he is a great coach. I don't think he is the greatest. He's one of the greatest coaches. Again, I think he's had a lot of advantages that most college coaches have. And I've said before, you can't tell me why there's a college coach coaching an NBA players in the Olympics when they're all made up of totally NBA players. So, again, say what you want. I think Coach Krzyzewski has done an unbelievable job. He's built a tremendous basketball program there. He is a great coach. Is he the greatest? Not at all. He's one of the greatest of all times. That about wraps up the show tonight. It's been great. Jerry Rice Jr., Quee Rice, really appreciate having them on. Really appreciate you listening to the show. Whenever you decide to listen, we say thank you. We look forward to doing it all next week. Fife, NBA playoffs right around the corner, man. Going to be definitely picking your brain to get the 4-1 on everything as the playoffs get ready to upcoming.
No doubt. I'm here.
Always a pleasure. Bottom Line Sports Show is out. We say peace.
Peace.